AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet, Chevy runs deep.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 148 for May 4th. Inside Ford's Technological Sandbox. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Thanks for joining us, people. It's great to have you back here with us on AutoLine After Hours. And as always, I've got the auto extremist here, Peter DeLorenzo.
Good afternoon, John.
He's a little bit demure today. He's a little bit under the weather, but he is here.
Yes, I am here.
We've also got Charlie Vogelheim. And Charlie, you have to tell the audience what you do and where you do it.
I am the Vice President of Strategic Alliances at a company called Digital Airstrike. And what we do is we help the dealers with social media. We go in and set up all of their social media solutions. 50 different social media websites. Manage reputation management. It's a wild, wild west out there right now in social media.
It is. But anyway, we got him here because he does know a lot about the car business, too.
Yeah. And then, you know, I walked in and I know, I'm sorry to hear you're under the weather, but I just wasn't sure if you were putting your curmudgeon face on when I first came in. And so it's
no, fun. I'm just kind of, if I'm a V12, I'm operating on about 7 cylinders.
Well, you had some interesting things to say about branding this week. You especially looked at Mercedes, Honda, Acura, BMW, Audi, and Porsche.
Well, it's kind of follow-up to the design, the three design columns I did. And, you know, branding and design are so inexorably linked. And, you know, the best example, of course, is Apple. Everything Apple does, their packaging, their interaction with customers, the design, the look and feel. I had a couple of readers write in and said, well, Steve Jobs gone, it's going to go downhill quickly. You know, I'm not so sure. But the power of the brand aided by design in Apple is striking. And, you know, we've all heard this from the manufacturers, oh, we want to be like Apple. Well, you know, that's...
So do it, right?
Yeah.
But you went after these manufacturers. Mercedes, for example, you're not that impressed with them these days.
Well, I mean, you know, they're inconsistent. You know, some of their designs are good, some of their designs aren't. I think marketing-wise, they wandered off in the wilderness for years. When they walked away from engineered like no other car in the world, which I think was one of the premier auto ad themes of all time, they floundered for years. And now they're finally back with the best or nothing, which was Gottlieb Daimler's founding principle. So they're back to where they need to be. But, boy, I think, you know, Mercedes just doesn't seem that special. Even do they have special cars? Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But you kind of have to pick and choose which ones. So it's not easy.
Right.
Yeah.
And Honda Acura.
Well, I think we've talked about Honda before. They just lost their way. I mean, they
were at the top of the heap for where they competed in.
You know, they were the motor company. They came up with extremely creative solutions that other manufacturers normally wouldn't. They seemed to march to a different drummer. They were very confident in what they did. And then it seems like in the last 6-7 years, they've just sort of started meandering away from that. And, it's you build it up over decades, and it can all go away.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
And Acura, you know, when they had the NSX and Honda engines were winning in Formula One, you know, Acura seemed to have a reason for being. Now, they're floundering now. They showed the NSX 3 years ahead of time because it was like the domestic manufacturers a few years ago. Yeah, well, look at this concept we got.
When you're in trouble, you show all the good stuff that you got coming, right?
But, Acura's, it just doesn't have the significance it enjoyed.
I've always felt that Acura has never decided what it really wants to be. Is it a luxury brand, or is it a pseudo-performance brand?
Or is it the best stuff Honda can give you?
Well, you used the term premium brand in your column, which I thought was apropos. And to your point, John, when it came out, it was before Lexus Infiniti, and it was never considered the luxury car for the simple fact it didn't have an 8-cylinder engine. I mean, for a lot of people, that was almost...
Or a rear drive.
Right, the barrier to entry, to that... name of luxury. So now, over time, they were the performance when they had the NSX and they had the Integras and cars that were, again, the best that Honda had to offer. And now it's a premium, but with Lexus, Infiniti so entrenched, and boy, you see Hyundai coming up through the Genesis and the Equus. It's like, well, where does...
And that Kia K9 that they showed.
Which is a car with presence.
Yes.
And that's thanks to Peter Schreier, of course, who's doing just bang-out stuff.
We're not going to get it, but I don't believe it.
Well, I think they've got issues because Genesis hasn't exactly set the world on fire. And Equus, they say they're hitting all their sales targets, but their sales targets are so easy to hit. I mean,
minuscule.
So I think they're worried about, wow, what happens when we bring in this luxurious-looking Kia, what's that do for the whole Genesis Equus effort at Hyundai?
Yeah, well, Kia seems to have more of an edge right now,
Oh, definitely it does. Just look at their marketing, which is some of the best stuff, which we've talked about on the show.
It's just more risk-taking, and it's interesting because people poo-poo brand. I get readers writing, brand doesn't mean anything. But, here is Hyundai and Kia. It's a live lesson right before our eyes.
Right.
Kia's got attitude, edgy. Hyundai's, mainstream. It's just...
But as you finish your column, and I take it, you should say it certainly, but if you jump on Audi, they have the styling and the product, in terms of the quality and even, well-equipped to back it. So, they've got the branding, but they have the product behind it. So it's not an empty promise to a certain extent.
Well, and Audi, that's been a 18-year project.
In the U.S. market.
Yeah.
Right. Because they had that unintended acceleration fiasco back
then. We're not talking about it anymore, except every time somebody brings it up.
But the amazing thing, too, about Audi is it spends the money to do things right. And they look to the long term. And, that's why I wonder if Cadillac and Lincoln can ever compete at that level, because I'm not convinced yet that American management will try to figure out, 12 years down the road, where do we need to be? And let's keep spending until we get there, because the Americans tend to, switch on, switch off. If things are going great, they'll keep doing it. But if there's any problems, it's like, let's cut this and save some money.
Well, Lincoln is the real... lesson right now, how they do it.
I want to ask you, BMW, what you think about that? Because I remember when they went off on that joy tagline in their advertising campaign, you just excoriated them.
Well, U.S. dealers were furious because, again, one of the great ad themes of all time, the ultimate driving machine. It powered BMW. They delivered the product, but the imagery in the consumers' minds was, they're not going to, take the BMW to the limit, but, they believe that these are the ultimate driving machines. But then when the German marketer said, well, we use joy in Europe, and we want that, basically they shoved it down the U.S. marketers' and dealers' throats, and they pushed back. And you don't see it anymore because it was a disaster. Hmm. They even had it on their race cars in the ALMS, their M3s, which was, it's so fragile. It's so fragile to keep focused and not meander off. At any moment, these companies can do it. That's why the example of Apple is a valid one, because they don't waver. Do people go into Apple stores looking for a deal?
No way.
No. Yeah. Impeccable branding, image, details. It all comes together there. And, you know, I've heard several marketers in the auto company say, oh, well, we want to be like Apple. You're not going to be like Apple. There's too many fiefdoms, too many silos, too many people throwing in grenades from the side. You know, it's too bad, but that would be the ultimate if a car company could do that. Mm-hmm. I think Porsche is the closest.
Well, and we'll get to them in a second, but BMW, sticking with them for the moment. You know, I'm wondering, Charlie, what do you think of their job of branding, blending design, marketing, and all that?
I'm sitting here, you know, in Detroit, just thankful that they didn't say we're the Cadillac of the German cars now. But you know, again, when they took that away, I had some great conversations, you know, as I watched Fiat come over and see, you know, how they were going to present themselves after a Mini had and things like that. There you're starting with a blank sheet of paper. You have some heritage vehicle over in Europe. You have some, you know, again, the ideas of the Italian lifestyle and things like that that you could really tie in. You know, my first impression of the J-Lo commercial was they kind of missed the mark a little bit. The second commercial with the Arbath and the cappuccino was right there. We're Italian, thought
it worked.
Italian. Yeah, it's fantastic. So I look at that and this the whole, and I was so glad I read your article about Apple, because as these manufacturers say, this is what we want to be like. Well, sure, wouldn't everyone? But two things. Number one, again, Apple just top down, left, right, all corners of the box are focused towards that. And let's not forget, again, how much bigger the automotive box really is, the complexities of
it.
Yeah,
it's a whole different thing.
And you mentioned that.
Yeah,
so,
and
it's just so hard. And so even the little part that we play in this in trying to keep the messaging from the retailers to be consistent with the messaging from the OEMs all the way down, because as you guys spend, you know, week in, week out talking about these fabulous products and things like that, they're dropped off at retailers that now have the one-on-one with the consumers, and trying to keep that consistent messaging all the way through, it's really a challenge. And again, just from, we talk about Kias and Hyundais, you know, they can be great products and things like that. Is it a luxurious experience that you're having at the retailers? And that's why Lexus Infiniti chose to make different stores out of that. Mm-hmm. I thought Hyundai's idea to deliver the Equus to the home was a fantastic idea.
Yeah, great idea, because then, you know, you don't go to the dealer.
Yeah, well, they only have to deliver 2,000 a year or whatever.
But then all of a sudden you think the other part is the homeowner doesn't want this dealership or this person or this company to know where they live or to be coming to their house. They all of a sudden, now you're coming into my life, and I'd rather come, you know, yeah, exactly. So, which was an interesting thing, because we can look at the convenience on the one side, but then we look at the actual performance.
So is Hyundai getting pushback from Equus buyers who do not want people
they
to
don't.
Come to their house?
No, they don't.
Really?
Yes. They do not want the presence. They want to come down. They don't mind the loaner cars and things like that. Again, hey, I applaud them for trying it, but mm-hmm. the learning right now is not as many as we thought, or let me put it another way, a lot more don't want us around than we ever predicted. So,
very interesting.
Yeah.
But getting back to BMW, Peter, where do you rate them in this branding effort?
I think they're still pretty good. But when they go off the rails, they kind of go off pretty deeply. But, you know, they seem to be able to stay focused and recover. And they've recovered from the joy thing. Even though the Germans use it apparently in Europe, over here it's just like one of the great ad themes of all time. You're going to walk away from that?
All right.
Just on an arbitrary notion?
Porsche, because Porsche's done some interesting things, i.e. with the Cayenne and now the baby Cayenne that's coming and, you know, coming out with a diesel engine, which is, you know, kind of interesting as well.
Well, I think they've been able to translate the Porsche image through different segments, which I didn't think they could. I was the first to say, this is a disaster. But they have proved to me that they can do it. And when you talked, I forget the head of Porsche, what's his name?
I know the guy in the United States is Von Platen.
But the... The main,
in Germany.
Yeah,
I'm blanking out.
When I sat with him in Santa Barbara, it was very clear that we are going to do Porsches. And we will do what we will enter any segments we want to. And we will.
Yeah.
But that's dangerous.
But they will be a Porsche.
I mean,
yeah, but
you know,
they will be a Porsche. Yeah.
It's cool to say it, and yeah, it's going to be a Porsche, but boy, I don't know about.
It's a fine
entering.
Line.
It's a very fine.
You know,
line.
So what do they have coming? They have Porsche based on the Q5.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the short wheelbase Panamera coupe, which
could look cool.
Oh man, I think that could be a fabulous car. And, you know, I don't know what else they have coming, but, you know, I haven't heard, like, you know, the first, and I talked to Porsche people, the first Cayenne was not what they wanted. The second Cayenne, the current Cayenne, which is almost 500 pounds lighter, and they spent a lot of time with it, they say that is the true.
I think the whole industry has learned what to do with SUVs, because, especially if you look at, like, the Volkswagen Touran, or Touareg, excuse me, big, heavy, very good off-road capability, but nobody uses that off-road capability. And I think the Germans, or the Europeans especially, looked at what the United States was doing with SUVs and thought, well, we got to do that too. And no, even the Americans now realize you don't have to do that. You don't need all this, you know, Moab slick rock kind of rock climbing capability. You don't need 7,000 pounds towing necessarily. It's you can do things that can drive well and still give you most of what an SUV will give you.
And I expect the Macan, which is what the Q5 Porsche is going to be called, is going to be really good.
So Porsche goes and makes an SUV, which is an aberration to a lot of people, because they did such a great job from the original design to carry it all the way through. You have Porsches of Porsches of Porsches. You look at all of the designs. And I totally agree with you. You know, I remember when Volvo first came out of it. Well, that made sense because they had been making wagons. But mm-hmm. Porsche, oh, my gosh. Then the Panamera comes out, and everyone's a little bit, really? Now you're ruining just another type of car? But you get behind the wheel of it, and it is fantastic. I mean, everybody nods, and this is way better. I don't know if the expectation was lowered or not. And then you look at that, and then all of a sudden you're talking about a variation of the Panamera, and I see you two guys nodding, and we're going, oh, my gosh, this is all of a sudden. Because the heart and soul of Porsche is in all of those products. And you kind of, as you're talking to a friend or you're looking at that, you're saying, look, these SUVs paid for the racing program. So you got to understand that, you know, this was something that they needed to do. But, you know, the new Boxster at the New York Auto Show and just the passion around that brand. But you look across all of the model lines, and there's a Porsche signature right there, just, I mean, in the design. And then they're backing it up with the performance.
Yeah, and they're very consistent. You know, yeah, they embrace these other segments, but they're true to the Porsche.
And we just got the April sales figures for the U.S. market, and Porsche had a whopping big growth. I mean, they did. Charlie, what did you make of the sales overall?
Well, it was interesting, you know, and I've got to say, and this is just me being a West Coast guy, it's very interesting for me to be in this town when that's coming out and how it's such a big part of the news here. And it just reminds me, as we'd be looking at some picture of a Kardashian back in L.A. when this is all going on. But I still have trouble. You and I have had this conversation with the measurements and then, you know, the big noise around the measurements. You know, General Motors is talking about $1 billion, but wait, there's an accounting that's been applied to that's bringing it down. But last year they did better, but there was some accounting that was done to that to bring it up. And the comparisons in terms of the growth, I'd still like to see some normalized. I'd like to see a straight line and then even a market share number that you could almost just do a better comparison one to the other. Because I know these headlines sell the papers or get you to stay through the commercial to watch on the news. And I'm hearing, oh, General Motors sales are down in Europe, but they did okay in North America. And was it? And then now I've got to go through all the numbers and say, was that just the reporter making some noise about all that? The overall attitude, I'm just very thrilled with what's going on in our industry.
Well, you deal with a lot of dealers.
Yes.
What's the feedback you get when you deal with them?
The dealers, again, are in the battlefield every day. They're trying to, you know, again, go against each other. Obviously, there was a reduction in the number of dealers. Those that are well-prepared in terms of to a certain extent, the product line that they were blessed with and the location they were blessed with are doing very well. And some of the conversations you have is, boy, we went through such a bad time. Was it worth it for how nice things are now? And everyone still says, no, it still wasn't worth it.
But yeah, it was brutal.
It was pretty brutal. So the dealers are much more positive. Again, still the truck sale numbers still seem to surprise people with how strong the gas prices are.
I'll tell you my story about gas prices.
Yeah.
3 years ago, maybe it was 4 years ago now, gas prices shot up very quickly to $3 a gallon, and everybody hit the panic button. In fact, a lot of people, especially in this area, were driving really slow. You'd get on the freeway, they're going like 45 miles an hour.
Back to 55.
The other day, I'm going down to the Tigers baseball game with my wife. I'm going 80 miles an hour. Gas prices are $4 a gallon, and I'm not passing anybody. Everybody's going 80 or even faster. And to me, there's been, $3 was a psychological barrier because gas prices went up so quickly. This is my read of the situation. And people were shocked that they went up so fast and they were panicked by it. This time it's been going up. So it hits $4 a gallon, big deal. I'm still driving fast, and so is everybody else around me. So it didn't surprise me to see that small car sales did not grow as fast as SUV or pickup sales.
Right. The other thing, and again, just here's the California statement, because I know you'll be interested. I'll probably see you out there, Peter. Of course, we have the electric vehicle show next week, and then the following show is the alternative fuels expo.
So awesome.
Yeah. I'll take pictures and send them to you. But it's funny because, again, obviously that's an important part of the industry, but it certainly isn't got everyone on fire. The all-electric vehicles right now, again, out there still, when we were at the New York Auto Show, we were talking, I was trying to get around some of the owners, some of the people that had purchased the Leaf and what their experience was with it. And again, I still have the real enthusiasts. I mean that in the sense of an alternative fuel enthusiast.
Electric vehicle enthusiast.
Exactly. Owning and operating those cars. And I'm still waiting to get the feel from the masses in terms of how those cars are really doing on the day-to-day. And it's right now that those that are really owning and operating one, it's their third car. It just they can't rely on it for the extended trip that might spring up in the middle of the day. So
yeah, I know people tell me, well, you got to wait, because electric car technology is so new and people have got to get used to it and it'll grow over time. But I think, when the first Mustang came out, it just blew out of the factory. I mean, they couldn't build these things fast enough. Okay, that's a sexy, hot car. When the first minivan came out from Chrysler, they couldn't build those things fast enough. We were talking about Apple before. The iPad, nobody knew they needed an iPad. The iPad comes out, everybody goes, oh, my God, and sales just take off. If you look at the first BlackBerry, arguably one of the first smartphones, it comes out and people go, oh, my God, I can get the internet and email and everything in my phone. Sales take off. And then they go, oh, but, the electric car, they got to learn about that. I don't think that's
going
to happen.
Well, I think, again, the problem is, and we don't have to spend all the time on this, but if we had reached that, we were looking for that technology exponential growth. So even when the Volt, I think, was on the drawing board, they were expecting that battery technology would be much farther along than it is. And unfortunately, it isn't. But if the Leaf or the Volt came out and you could go 500 miles and you could recharge the thing in a half hour, an hour,
We'd all dump our
gas
cars.
Exactly.
Sure we would.
And that's just it. It's not significantly different, and to a certain extent, it's less convenient. So,
really good. Well, hey, this is a good point. Let's take a commercial break. Let's get Bill Coughlin, our guest, coming on right now. But, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our great sponsors at Bridgestone. Well, Bill Coughlin, it's great to have you here with us on Autoline After Hours. I'm really thrilled, and the audience will be, too, once they learn the topics that we get into here. But welcome aboard.
Thanks a lot. To me, this is a big thrill for me. I've been watching your show, reading Peter's columns and so forth for years. So, wow.
That's why I'm sitting here, just to kind of give you a little security here, just to make sure.
So, Bill, tell the audience what you do at Ford.
Well, I'm the intellectual property chief. Intellectual property, patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets. And I have one of the funner jobs in the company because I get to see all of the products and technology long before they come out to the public, and oftentimes long before they get to the brass in a company. And so I get to help the team, figure out how to protect this stuff, appropriately. And we do a pretty good job at it. But once we have all this intellectual property, can we leverage it in some way?
You mean license it to others?
License it, exactly right. And then I also defend the company. I'm a lawyer. Kind of look like a lawyer.
They went on TV.
Darn, yeah. I thought you were a technologist.
Yeah. Well, I am an electrical engineer.
Oh, so, okay. So you're okay. You can stay.
Yeah, thanks. But I did turn to the dark side, if you will, to become an attorney. But a patent attorney is pretty good. So it's a great life, and we have a lot of fun protecting things and as well as defending the company. So it's a kind of a full boat of work.
Tell us a little bit about the licensing thing, because I'm intrigued that car companies develop things and let other car companies or whoever. How does that all work, and how does it work between car companies to license technology?
Well, you know, the marketplace for licensing technology in our industry is a bit dysfunctional. It's not quite as dysfunctional as the smartphone industry, right? Everybody's suing each other.
Everyone's suing, right? The whole electronics industry is suing.
Yeah, they've gone nuts. I think there's 50 lawsuits between Apple and Samsung alone in 10 different countries.
Jeez.
Now, come on.
Unreal.
That's a little unreal. So, you know, who wins in that situation? The lawyers do, right? They're going to send a lot of their kids to college. But you know, so the kind of licensing that I think it's smart to do is to look for opportunities where everybody can win. And so, you know, we at Ford are very open to licensing in technology. And if it'll help our, you know, our customers, we want it. And so my team both licenses in and licenses out. And so we look for opportunities.
How do you do that? I mean, you don't go to eBay or you guys don't have ads on television. How do you learn what others have and how do they learn what you have?
Well, you have a sense of, you know, what the particular technology, what it, you know, who might be interested in it. And it's not easy. It's not always an easy sell. Frankly, I think it's easier to sell to Ford than for people to receive. Because we're set up for it. We've got a team, a licensing team within the intellectual property team that is, you know, willing to do that. So we cut these deals when we're working with suppliers or potential suppliers. We look for these opportunities. And some of them are pretty natural. And some, you know, maybe outside of our industry. So, for example, we have a really good a night vision system. Now, you don't see it on Ford cars because we don't have it, you know, perfected to the point where it's a cost, you know, we can cost it right. But there's one that we'd be happy to find somebody to license that to, work with them, develop it better, get that cost down, and make it available. You know, the inflatable rear seat belts, Ford has some innovation there, some IP, the supplier has some. I'd be happy to try to figure out how to get that into other cars. It helps the safety of the vehicles, and from my perspective, you know, can we get that out to other vehicles? Be happy to do that.
Didn't I see another manufacturer using the refueling without the gas cap besides Ford? You pioneered it.
We pioneered it, and again, it's I think that's primarily a supplier innovation.
Sir, GM car, I just read.
Yeah,
this
it wasn't comment. A Cadillac that just said they have capless.
XTS,
right. I think you're right.
Right. Ford can't think up everything, right? So, you know, if there's a supplier out there.
Are you allowed to say that?
yeah. And, but, you know, if a supplier has a great innovation, we want to get into Ford cars. And so I think the atmosphere today is much more welcoming than it may have been in the past, where maybe cost was king, you know, some time ago in the past.
When Ford first came out with the Fusion Hybrid, or no, I guess it was the Escape Hybrid was the first hybrid. It was all the news was, all they did was take all of Toyota's technology. How did that all work out, and where does it stand now?
Yeah, not at all. We didn't take any technology from at Toyota at all. We worked with a company called Aisin, which is related to Toyota, and they identified some Toyota patents that they thought maybe we should take a look at. And we looked at it and we thought, maybe we should take a license to these. And so we entered into that negotiation. But you have to understand that that happens between the auto companies. Toyota has come to us and asked for licenses. We've granted licenses. There's no technology changing hands. This is a license, a patent license, like almost like a covenant not to sue. saying, look, we're not going to sue you if you do this. And so Ford designed our system on our own. And we now, I think, have nearly 500 patents on our HEV technology. So, you know, we're very proud of it. You know, frankly, if you go one-on-one with our good buddies at Toyota, you know, in terms of the fuel economy, I think we beat them.
You stack up very well, yeah. That's for sure.
So is there like a double secret bar that you guys all hang out in?
A speakeasy.
Talk about stuff. Yeah. Really?
Yeah, you have to know the code word.
Yeah, really? What are you guys working on? Really?
So you've got Ford developing. You've got your competitors developing. You've got suppliers that are deep in development. Is there still anybody from the outside world that sneaks in with something like intermittent wipers or something like that?
Well, we get literally thousands of cards and letters from people who would like to say, hey, Ford, you know, I've got this great idea or I've got this invention. And we receive them in a way that hopefully, you know, keeps Ford from being sued, because we want to do the right thing. At Ford, we actually have a directive that says we cannot infringe other people's intellectual property, and we take that really, really seriously. So we do receive these in a way that we're not going to get sued, and we have a technical reviewer in research and technical reviewer in our product programs and looking at them and to see can we make something of this idea and, you know, work with the person. And we've got several that are in progress. I don't know if they'll make it. It's really tough to get anything onto a car, you know, frankly. Even for engineers, it's hard to get stuff onto a car. But that's not to say that we're not very open to it. And then I've told my team, you know, keep an eye out. If you've got somebody has a great idea and doesn't have a patent on it, you know, we'll work with them. We'll pay for that patent for that inventor, and, you know, assuming we get the right terms for us, so we can use, you know, without fear, and that the inventor can benefit. Now, we haven't found that one yet, but I keep looking for it because, you know, frankly, you know, as Al Mulally would say, you know, profitable growth for all, not, you know, Ford wins, everybody else doesn't. That's not what we're about.
Pretty cool. So is it expensive to license technology from other companies, or do you guys charge a bundle of money for what you license? I mean, or how's that work?
Yeah, we do charge money. We have licensed some things for nothing. You know, the what we call a belt minder, as if your seatbelt is unbuckled for more than 8 seconds.
I got to tell you, I hate that thing.
I know.
I hate it.
You are not alone, but we license that for free.
So it hurts me to hear that you're giving it away for free.
Yeah. But
is that because no one will pay for it? Or?
Yeah. Well, it has changed behaviors.
I know it does. Right? Yeah. I know it works. And, I'm just telling you.
It's a reminder.
I would not disconnect it in my car. I'd put a bullet through it.
Right. But what, you know, my instruction to the team is, look, treat others as you would want to be treated if you were sitting in their shoes. And so, you know, will we charge money? Absolutely. Do people, you know, when we license them, do we pay money? Absolutely. But frankly, we've done this in a way that has grown the licensing business within Ford fairly dramatically. It's very healthy. We've done really, really well at it. And we have repeat customers, you know, companies that have come back because they know that they've been treated right by the company. And it's not just, you know, how much can we squeeze out of you? That's not our game at all.
Do you get companies from outside the automotive industry licensing your technology?
Yes, but I'm drawing a blank on it, give you a good example.
Because so much of your technology must be application specific to an automobile.
Yeah, that's entirely right. I mean, you can use technology, for example, active night vision could be used on a lake freighter, for example, at night. But you know, in general, what we develop is for our car customers.
Mm-hmm. That's why they don't hit deer on the lake. What about, again, you go into the office and the team's in there in the morning. I mean, you're not just saying, okay, somebody invent something today. I mean, you're obviously working on projects. You're actually, you know, going on solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we don't sit around in the office kind of waiting for the inventions to kind of magically appear. You know, we get out. We have incentive programs, seminars, teaching people, literally teaching engineers how to think creatively, inventively. I drove a truck this week with a really cool invention in it, and before the brass got a chance to see it. And, you know, I have high hopes for that. So
you can't tell us what that is.
I can't tell you what that is. But good gracious, you know, it left an impression on me. And that's why I say it's a fun job, because I get to really see this stuff, talk to the engineers. Have you thought about this? Could we do that with this? You know, what's the next level? And we get thousands of invention disclosures from engineers per year. And so, you know, we try to keep good contacts with the engineering teams. And like I say, we'll go out and talk to the engineering teams and so forth. And you build up those relationships. And, you know, frankly, we've got lots of inventors who have multiple inventions. Because once you start thinking like an inventor, it's really hard to turn that off. Because you start seeing problems as opportunities, not as, oh, gosh, you know, what do I do with this? It's, oh, you know, that is a problem. I'm going to solve that problem. So it's a mindset change, and once it flips, it's really hard to go back.
And what you're doing, too, to help, you know, accelerate this whole mindset and approach is you've played a key role in bringing Tech Shop to Detroit, which, for those who don't know, is essentially like joining a health club, but instead of having all these different exercise machines that you can use to work out, it's got manufacturing equipment, CNC machines, yeah, and grinders and welders and CNC sewing machines and CAD terminals and the like. So tell the audience a little bit about what you hope to accomplish by having Tech Shop literally right on the back doorstop of Ford and Dearborn.
I'd be happy to. You know, one of the things that we do as an IP team, we have our own brainstorming center in our building, and so we can invite engineering teams in and work on improving inventions and so forth. And we're the only IP team in the country, the world, as far as I know, that has that. But we can't make anything. So I've been, you know, keeping an eye on how can I get into a position where you can, you know, walk down the hall from one of these sessions and actually build a model very quickly, and so. I read about Tech Shop, and it clicked. I thought, oh, this is it. If I can get these guys to come to Detroit, and, you know, hopefully in our backyard, I can make it easier for Ford engineers and other employees to go from a paper idea very quickly to a prototype. Because it's easy to dismiss an idea, or even a great idea, on paper. But when you build it, people can experience it. It's a world of difference. Plus, you learn a lot in that process. You may be inventing more as you keep iterating and prototyping. And I thought, I think I can actually solve three problems at once with this, because I had a building in mind, I thought it would be perfect for Tech Shop. And I call them up and said, I've got the right building, you know, for you guys. And Mark Hatch, the CEO, said, you know, I've heard that before. I said, no, I really do. You're going to say words like, wow, how can we do this? And he came, and that's exactly.
This is an empty building that Ford land.
Building.
So, I mean, it's the company owned the building.
Company owns the building, and it's a large building. It's like 38,000 square feet, and it's unusual because it's got a large auditorium in it, like 184 seats. It's got a central area that I think is ideal for a technology showroom, and in an area off to the side where maybe you could do some open innovation things. So Mark Hatch came up and I explained to him kind of the vision that I had in mind, and, you know, that this would not just help Ford people, but our area. And had maybe a year or so back got a call from Chris Webb over at the Engineering Society of Detroit, and he said, "Bill, you know, we got thousands of engineers that are out of work, and is there anything you can do?" Me? Let me think. Let me, keep an eye out. And I thought, well, this is it. This will really help our community, because TechShop has been able to prove that they can, really create, entrepreneurial successes with being able to prototype things and get things into market quickly. And if we can do that here in our area and help the auto industry, help Ford, the area as a whole, wow, we've done a great thing. And when you think of Ford, at least we want you to think of Ford, great products, strong business, and build a better world. And we can do all three of those things with this initiative, because we will have a technology showroom. There will be a licensing component to this that's coming. But first, we have to have the grand opening of TechShop. Which is this weekend. And TechShop has, I think it's almost $1 million worth of equipment in there. And not quite anything that can be, you can have in your mind, you can build there, but it's pretty darn close. You can't make glass, a few things like that. But you can cut through 5 inches thick steel with water. They have a water jet that
this is. CNC water jet.
CNC water jet. And all of this is actually approachable by average people. You don't need to be, a PhD engineer to make this work. Most of their stuff, the CNC stuff, the kind of the automated stuff, you have to think of as a printer. So you design something in the CAD software, which is graciously provided by Autodesk, and then you basically print to that machine, and you have to set the machine up properly. It's more than just hit the button. But if you think of it like a printer, it's approachable. You can do this.
And they have classes. So if you don't know how to use this stuff, you can take a class in it. And I've joined TechShop. I'm a member. I've taken a TIG welding class and a metalworking class. And what I love about their approach is small classes, very hands-on with an instructor. The whole idea is we're not going to read books. You're not going to be here for weeks and weeks on end. Watch me. And here he says, here's how you don't get hurt. Now watch me weld. Then they'll hand you the welding gun and say, now you do it. I mean, literally within 15 minutes of getting there, you're welding stuff together, or you're cutting steel, or you're doing whatever it happens to be that you're in. That's what I love about the approach is we're not going to talk all this theory or study, and there's no tests. It's just hands-on, start making stuff immediately.
I bet you can't wait till all the scout troops are lined up with their Pinewood Derby cars to come in there and get them all done.
It would be a great place to be able to do that. And the laser cutters, will cut through, wood and plastic and other materials, and they're fun to play with. But the key is for anybody who's listening who thought, well, geez, I'm not a mechanical person. I don't know how to do these things. Don't worry about it. I've actually done the same thing that John has done, taken the classes. I signed up for years as a TechShop member, and because I wanted to test it for myself. And so I'm not an expert in CAD software. I've never done anything in the CAD software, but I took the CAD software class, and I took the forgot the name of the machine, but it's a bot. That will cut wood, like a router. And my goal was, can I make a piece of flat pack furniture that doesn't require screws, nails, or any tools to assemble it? Kind of one better than IKEA, okay? A high aspiration, to be sure. But nevertheless, it was a challenge to myself, right, to see, can I use the equipment at TechShop? Can I use their design tools and then actually automate with a shop bot? That's what it was. And I was. I was able to do it and put things together like a puzzle, and it worked. But it's a first prototype. And so I learned in that process, what I need to do to make the next prototype even better. But it's very approachable.
So the materials. I mean, obviously there's the tools there, but what about the materials, whether it's the welding?
You can bring in your own materials, or they have materials there that you can buy at very reasonable prices. Right. And if they don't have the material, you can tell them, hey, can you guys get me this stuff? And they're very accommodating there.
Yeah. Well, all the tools are available for free that they use in the location.
And to build on what you've said too, Bill, one of the guys I talked with in my metalworking class is an artist. And I said, you got to be kidding. What's an artist doing here? And he looks around the room at all this equipment. He goes, are you kidding? Where else would I be able to put my hands on stuff like this? I can make anything here. So, yeah, to your point, it's very approachable. There's more than a few artists there mm-hmm. now and a whole bunch of engineers and other people who just want to make things.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So will Ford use this as like a way of working with suppliers as an incubation center?
Yes. We will have a brainstorming part of the building for Ford employees to use. Part of our incentive program was to give free 3-month memberships to Ford employees who submit a worthy invention disclosure to my team, because I want to reward them. I want them to go there to think creatively, to learn new ways of working, and to think that they could build something. Ford's got lots of tools, lots of machinery all over the place. But you, as a particular Ford employee, may not have access to that, may not know where it is, how to schedule it, and so forth. You could do that right at Tech Shop. And my hope is that as we make more and more use of Tech Shop in the building, suppliers will come. They will, display the technology that they would like to license. They'll go, boy, this is a great place for our people, as well. And we can connect those that we work with in unique ways. So, for example, we did an agreement with, I can't say the company's name, but it's a green materials company. So there's a new green material. And we're talking with them, can you provide that material to Tech Shop and see what people do with it? See what they can make with that, right? Now, without Tech Shop, they wouldn't have that kind of access. And it's a benefit that we, could provide to Tech Shop by working with Ford.
How many people can be in there at a time?
Ooh. It's a good question. They've got dozens of machines, maybe 50, 60 people comfortably at any one moment.
Right. And it's open from, 9 o'clock in the morning till midnight every single day of the week. I think every single day of the year. Maybe they close down for Thanksgiving or Christmas or something, but... So they can accommodate you just about any time. I was there at 10 o'clock this morning because I do have an idea for making a velomobile, something that I've been dying to do for decades, but never could be able to do it. I didn't have the equipment or the time or anything like that, so I'm working at it at Tech Shop. I was there with two guys who were working with me, and, there's people designing on CAD. There's people on heavy machinery, on light machinery, on working on other things, having meetings, discussing men and women, all different ages. It's really cool.
Yep. And they have what they call dream consultants there. So the employees are all trained, and you can tell them what you want to do, and they can help you do that. So, for example, just a practical example, this is an iPad case. It was designed in Menlo Park, their Menlo Park facility. But a guy came in and said, I would like to make an iPad case out of bamboo and have it kind of look like a book. And never done anything like that before, didn't know what glues to use or whatever. And so they work with them. And designed up, with the bamboo and the nice leather covered wood, and he put it up on the internet, and they sold millions of these things.
See, I love that. I love it.
If you show the old,
and it looks beautiful.
It's a dodo case.
It's a dodo case. Yeah, exactly right. Protects your iPad from being extinct.
Yeah.
Go extinct. So you can have a dream. That's Tech Shop. Their tagline is build your dreams here, and so they if you got an idea, and you've never had a chance to build it, you can come there and. The dream consultants will kind of help take you through the steps. This is the machine you want to use. Here's a class you need to take. And you can call them over. I'm having trouble with this. You know, I don't understand. Well, they'll sit down and help you with it.
I got to believe you're going to be doing a show from there one of these days.
We've got to do a show from there. That's right. Absolutely. We will. Because to see it is when it really clicks. Actually, we did a show for Autoline this week a year and a half ago on the Menlo Park one. And it was awesome. I ran into a guy working on an electric motorcycle, which won, I think, the TTX, you know, race. A guy literally building a lunar lander. And I said, what do you mean a lunar lander? You mean to go on the moon? Yeah, to go on the moon. And another guy developing a diamond deposition machine. So, I mean, there's really cool stuff going on there.
That's amazing. I have a quick question on intellectual property, just going back to we were having a conversation about, you know, some of the ridiculous things or what we consider ridiculous in a car sometimes. It shows up on a dashboard or on a steering wheel stalk or something like that. I heard that Europeans, that the designer, the engineer owns that outright or can own that outright and have an actual stake in its own success.
Yeah.
If they work for a manufacturer, they ensure maybe it stays there a little bit longer than it should.
Well, in Germany, it's in the law that the invention is owned by the employee, and the company, the employee is obligated to disclose it to the company, and the company's got like 2 months to say, we're going to use it or not use it. And if they use it, they have to reward the inventor, you know, commensurate with the rules as to that. So if they make really good use of it, the inventor can do quite well economically. Now, if they say, no, we don't need this, we want to patent it, the inventor can go patent it wherever the inventor wants in the world, and if the company later decides to use it, they get to pay the inventor a fair amount more. You know, so it is a bit different system. We have an incentive program for Ford and inventors around the world, and we pay them pretty well. We recently enhanced them. And this Tech Shop membership was one of the several enhancements that we made. And so Ford inventors can do, you know, well, I don't want to say quite what the numbers are, you know, but, you know, I've told our folks that, you know, look, if you come up with a inventions that are doing quite well and you get this repeatable, you could pay for your retirement villa. There's enough money here into the reward system. I said, don't tell finance. Hopefully no one's watching.
Hey, your secret right? safe here, right?
Yeah.
And you can check the website.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, what's Bill doing? But we want to, you know, reward and recognize, you know, great invention in the company, and that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating story. I love this stuff. But we've got to take a quick commercial break right now, thank our sponsors at Chevrolet, and then we're going to come back and get audience questions about everything we've been talking about here today. But first, Ben, let's get to it. Let's thank our friends at Chevy.
It was more than a car to him. It really was his baby.
My old Chevy. Dear God.
Okay, Ben, it's time to get to the questions from the audience. Let's bring up rapid fire. Okay, Bill, the first one goes to you. This is from Mallory and Justin Morrison. They want to know, will Ford utilize the inventions in Tech Shop? Are the two connected?
Oh, that's a good question. The answer is possibly. If a good automotive invention is created in Tech Shop, you know, frankly, you know, we have a much better chance of learning about it. And one of the things I want to do is we've got displays set up within Tech Shop now that will be used to display those prototypes that that people come up with, so that we can make, you know, easier to learn about. I did sit down with one of the Tech Shop members, and who's got an interesting rail system for mounting speakers, boxes at the bed of a pickup truck and so on. And so we made sure that I can talk to him in a way that we're not going to get sued. And then, one of the guys on my team is trying to get to the right people within Ford. Is this something that Ford could use? Is it something that maybe a SEMA, group could use and that sort of thing? So my hope is that we will be able to connect to the maker community in a way that we haven't been able to do in the past. And when you think, you go way, way back, right? Henry Ford was a maker, right? You know, he created that car in his own garage. And so those kinds of people with really good, concepts that can prove it out, we can experience it, we're happy to talk to.
That's cool. Peter, this one goes to you. Omar Sikis wants to know, how come there doesn't seem to be any books right now about Ferdinand Piëch in English? He says, all the books on this great car guy are in German. Could you recommend me to one in English? And if that's not the case, could you start writing one?
Yeah, I'd like to. Carl Ludvigsen's Excellence Was Expected, I think, covers Piëch. Mm-hmm. That's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Charlie, we've got one for you here, too. Dr. Botox wants to know, how's the Ford Fiesta social media thing going? Fiesta sales have cratered this year, he says, which I don't think is entirely true, but how's that whole social media thing going for Fiesta?
Well, what's interesting, and again, Ford did a great job in terms of trying something new, using social media as a media, as an introduction to the vehicle, getting people interested through other media than television, radio, newspaper type of thing, trying to get the youthful crowd involved. There was a big push on that particular car. We had some growth in timing in that segment. And then there's a lot of other cars that have all of a sudden entered the segment. The Dart is not quite out yet, but it's coming up. There's a number of other cars even within the Ford lineup, the Fusion that's got down the road. I don't think that it's cratered from a purely social media standpoint, but it's no longer an event. It's like the car is out and it's on the road now, and it's, it is what it is. But to say, I think the event was around the introduction of the car rather than just the existence of the car. And that'll be the interesting thing to see carry forward.
And I would agree with the viewer that said that Fiesta sales are down. I'm not sure I would say cratered, but look at the Yaris, look at the Fit, look at the Sonic.
Look at the Kia.
And, Fiesta's right in there with the same sales. In fact, it's actually towards the top of the segment. So if you look at the whole segment, Fiesta's really not doing that bad. That's the only point I would make. DC Auto Geeks is curious, Bill, how Ford Global Technologies is working to combat counterfeit parts in the global market. Do you get involved in that?
Yes, we do. Through our partnership with Ford Customer Service Division, and they've got the brand protection folks across the globe who will find the counterfeit parts and work with us to make sure legally we're taking the right steps to stop this. And we've done a pretty good job. That's a job that never ends, unfortunately, but we've done pretty good there. And we've done really well with what we would call copy parts as well. So, the fenders and the headlights and so forth that literally people can put on a scanning copy machine and make a duplicate of the part. And we've been so successful at stopping that, there's literally bills pending in Congress against the enforcement of design patents by automakers for aftermarket parts.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So so somebody that's gotten in an accident, you don't want them pulling up to the tech center there and rebuilding a couple body panels or something like that.
Well, it's really the Taiwanese that will cherry pick, what cars are really selling well with what parts. And, we have to have parts availability across the entire spectrum. They just pick a few of the parts that, are going to most crash parts, if you will, and then try to undercut us in price.
Right.
Well, if you're just going to copy, you know, put it on a copy machine with no R&D, no design, you know, testing, verification, whatever, or very, you know, I would say non-verification, but nevertheless, you know, will it really meet the quality standards that we have it for? The answer is no. But will it look kind of like what was there? The answer is yes. And it's going to be cheaper, you know, because they skipped all those steps. And so, you know, we've tried hard and really successfully to stop that. You can still, you know, we've licensed one company on our design patents. And, you know, so we're doing a pretty good job on that as well.
Ben, I see we've got some phone calls. Let's bring the first one in.
Hello. My name is Victoria, and according to the auto extremists, what would be the most extreme American car a person could buy? You know, I see some extreme cars like the Porsche 911, Audi S12, but where does the American cars fall in?
Well, I think you've got the CTS-Vs in terms of high performance.
Yeah, I had a hard time hearing the question myself.
Basically, yeah, for the auto extremists, you know, again, what is the most extreme American car? You talk about a lot of the European cars in your column.
CTS-V and the ZR1 Corvette and the new Mustang.
And Viper, too.
Yeah.
That's a pretty extreme car.
Well, Viper was kind of darling at the New York Auto Show last month.
And, yeah, big hit there. Goatrope wants to know, there's only three car brands with year-to-year double-digit losses, Mitsubishi, Cadillac, Buick. Is that right? Buick? Is GM bringing the former Pontiac, Saturn, Hummer, and Oldsmobile buyers back into the fold? If not, why not?
They're trying to.
They would love to. But, again, you know, you almost have to go brand by brand on that. But when you think certainly Saturn, they're going to be scattered probably, you know, to the Korean and Japanese to a certain extent. And then there is some great entry level, as I already mentioned, you know, from Ford and even, you know, Chrysler the Dart coming out. I don't know where the Hummer people go, but Jeep has been fantastic.
What's very interesting is once you kill off a brand as a car company, even if you have other brands, you typically lose those buyers, or the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
It's not like they say, oh, they killed Oldsmobile, I guess we have to buy Buicks. No, that's like you gave them carte blanche to go anywhere in the market
right.
And look now.
And that was some of the, you know, some of the issues with even closing down dealerships. And again, in beautiful state here, if you talk about a dealership in the UP that maybe was in a small area, once that dealership's closed, now they're driving down to Alpena or whatever, and then they've got a full selection of vehicles to buy from.
Okay, Mitch W. wants to know, Bill, how much value added does Ford wish to develop in the field of auto computation? Will you buy chips off the shelf or develop them from others' IP?
Well, we don't make chips. I don't think we develop chips. We use a lot of chips. But, you know, what I'm having trouble articulating is that I see so many different inventions across the spectrum that, you know, we are inventing all over the place. But, you know, we don't. I think we draw the line. I mean, we make lots of circuits, but in general, you know, Ford has, you know, you really leverages its supply base. So even if we were to design a chip, which I don't think we'll do, we'd go to a supplier and say, you know, help us make this.
It's not a core competency.
No, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it ever was. It might have been a long, long time ago, but I don't think we're in a chip design. You know, we're really in, you know, for example, you know, trailer sway control. The algorithms in which we have to do there with sensors is actually closer to rocket science than you might think. And so, you know, that's kind of the focus on how can we solve, you know, real consumer problems at a level they'll appreciate.
Can you characterize, like, the quantity of, again, inventions or patents? Are they electronic? Are they a mechanical engineer? Are they engine related, or
all of the above? I know it's an easy answer,
yeah.
but we have.
Is there one area that's more than others now? Or?
Well, I think, you know, we do a lot of engine work. We have a lot of inventions around engines, engine controls, emission systems. But we, you know, chemical inventions, you know, materials, you name it. I mean, it runs the gambit. For me, it makes it really exciting because I don't know what's going to come in the door. You really have to have a real breadth of knowledge to be able to handle, you know, some of these things. And it will go from the rocket science all the way to the very simple, you know, tailgate lift assist, which is a really good solution for us, but a relatively simple mechanical, you know, device. But you'd be surprised. I mean, cars are getting, you know, incredibly sophisticated, and the software, hardware, you know, integration is phenomenal.
Okay, Chuck Renzi says, this one's for Peter. Your article on a revamped NASCAR schedule was spot on, in my opinion. More road races, a few more open weekends, and more importantly on the open weekends, have them before the major races, as Peter had included in his schedule. And for Pete's sake, no pun intended, leave them crew chiefs a little more latitude in modifications of the race car.
Yeah, that would be good. One reader had a really good suggestion, and that is to rotate the tracks. So rather than cut tracks permanently from NASCAR, just go every other year to certain tracks.
What a great idea.
And keep the schedule, though, but keep the schedule manageable, like 25 to 27 races.
I like that idea because you could then fill up those racetracks when you did have a race there.
Right.
Huh. Ben, we got another phoner. Let's bring it in.
Hi, guys. It's Jonathan out in Old Japan. I want to thank you. This is a fabulous show. Really impressed with Ford's inventiveness. It's very exciting, the product lineup as well. A good friend of mine wants to buy the Fusion, the new Fusion coming out. When is that supposed to hit the showrooms? Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
Not till September.
September, really, that late? Hmm. Well, there you go, Jonathan. You got to wait till the fall.
I'm impressed you didn't pull out an opportunity to buy.
We'll throw this
order pad.
I wish I could. You know, the current Fusion is you know, I think it was, you know, car of the year, and so it's a great car. The new one is really exciting. You know, all the new ones are kind of exciting, but this one I think is going to be a knockout success. And it has a stop-start on it for our first, you know, automatic with stop-start anywhere, as far as I know.
Did that come out of your group? Or is that a supplier?
It comes out of Ford. But the you know, how you stop-start the car for sure, because there's a lot of inventing that needs to be done. So, for example, if you come up to a stoplight, you're still in gear, the car turns itself off. When the car turns itself back on, you're in gear, you know, and so you don't want the car to lurch forward. So how do you turn the engine back on in a way that doesn't do that, but doesn't also create emissions problems? And it's fairly clever stuff there, and you know, we should have a fairly broad patent on how to do this in a way that doesn't create an emissions issue, you know, so, you know, you're very proud of the kind of, you know, intelligent design and creativity the guys have.
I'm thinking of you just saying, let's go through every car and tell me if there's anything cool on it, okay? And now day 32.
Hey, Charlie, I'm going to throw this one in your lap. A.M. Guerrero says, I read that the Ford Focus is eating a portion of the Fiesta sales in the U.S. Is this true? He says, here in the Philippines, the Fiesta's doing well, but in a few months, they'll launch the 2012 ASEAN spec Focus.
Okay, so I'm not going to. I'm going to just say I know a lot, but about the Asian spec Focus, I do not. But I do know that, and I alluded to it, that I know that, as I call them, the Ford F cars, you know, the Fiesta Focus Fusion, that there is a little bit of overlap that's going on in there right now. And again, we witnessed it. I get the opportunity to spend some time with consumers at the New York Auto Show. After it opens, I stay for another day or two and walk around. And it was amazing to me that, you know, somebody that was attracted by one one of the F cars, but then was interested by the other. And I'm sorry, knowledgeable about what the Asian spec is, but I know that any of the new stuff, and that as much as Ford wants to have a world car, they've now really just have a world platform that then they can create a car that's a little bit more specific for the market. And I know that excites the locals.
Yeah. And I know, whenever you go into a dealership, if the salesperson can talk you up into a bigger size car where they're going to get a bigger commission, of course they're going to
try
to do
that. But,
some
of the things that we're seeing now when you go out there is people have gone in to say, I want this small car because of the fuel economy or something like that. And all of a sudden, again, with the engineering that's got on and the capabilities of some of these larger cars, which they're putting smaller engines into that are very capable for the size, I think that's what one of the pleasant surprises that has occurred.
Yeah, that's a great point. Bob Longmate says, any further word on the future availability of laser ignition, which Ford has been seriously experimenting with for the past several years, predominantly at the Dunton Powertrain Development Center in England?
Wow.
Room 17, third floor.
Yeah. The last instruction I got from our PR department was don't reveal anything that's confidential, not yet public. And so,
Bob, I think you just asked a very good question.
I don't want to lead one way or the other, but.
Maybe I shouldn't ask the second one of his either. He says, I understand that one of Ford's latest free IP initiatives given to the global automotive industry is in regards to a new technology glass adhesive with virtually no volatile compounds, providing a much safer environment for its personnel within its vehicle manufacturing facilities. Am I correct, he asks.
I don't know if it's free, someone's interested, we'd be happy to come to very favorable terms. So I don't believe that one's free, but, you know, like I said, we're not trying to maximize the income in any one particular thing. We'd much rather people go, this is a great company to work with. We'd love to be able to come back if we have something else or get something from them. And so that's kind of, where we want to position ourselves.
Here's a great question for George from Brooklyn says, how much duct tape is a person allowed to use?
Oh, God.
Is that in life? Is that from birth?
I don't know, but it's
the great duct tape monitor.
In the all-time great inventions, duct tape's got to be up there, right?
One of the greatest.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest. And I don't know if there's a man alive who doesn't use duct tape, doesn't have one or two rolls at the house.
I'm looking at a car in the parking lot at the motel as I'm leaving this morning, and they had put duct tape around the sunroof because obviously through the winter it leaked somehow. But in this warm day, they had finally pushed it up, and you had this duct tape kind of hanging down but so they could get the sunroof open, just kind of vented a little bit. So that was going to have to be retaped.
Okay, Rum and Coke says, Bill, did you see the movie about the invention of the intermittent wiper, which Charlie alluded to before, mm-hmm. Flash of Genius? He says, what do you think of it?
I couldn't sit through it. I tried.
You had to get up and leave.
You watch it intermittently.
Yeah. it was a rental, but I couldn't watch it. Part of it, it's quite a sad story, to be really honest, because the gentleman, literally went insane, so it's a depressing movie. How truthful that is, that movie, like most movies, the truth in the movie, putting the two together, not really there. So,
this was before your time, no?
Oh, yeah, that was before my time. But interestingly enough, Dr. Kearns was the last person to win a patent case against Ford. And like I say, unfortunately, he went insane in that process, and no one has won since. So we have a very good record of defending the company in respect to IP attack. And it's not just because we've got brilliant people. It's really the process of the company, right? We do not want to infringe other people's legitimate rights. And if we make a mistake, we'll find a way to make it right.
Cool. We've got, I think, one more phoner here. Ben, let's bring it in.
Hi there. Dan Smith from Durham, North Carolina. I just wanted you guys to know that you aren't the only ones who noticed that the 2014 Ford Mustang / Evos looks like an Aston Martin Vantage Junior. How much longer does Ford Motor Company intend on keeping Ian Callum hostage before he escapes and returns to his real job?
He's a lair.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Wow.
We're cleaning out his drawers.
Yeah. I don't believe Aston has a problem with the Evos. The Mustang will, the future Mustang, which I've seen, you know, will be a Mustang. So no question about that going forward. And, you know, we have no desire to hurt Aston in any way, shape, or form. We sell most of our, we sell engines, and most of their engines come from Ford. And so, are we talking to them and trying to figure out how to make them happier than they were with some of the press reports? Yeah.
Good answer. And with that, I think we ought to wrap this show up. But Bill Coughlin, thanks so much for coming in. Fascinating discussion. And I hope to see you down at Tech Shop. And sometime in the future, we got to do a show from there and have you there as well. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
Charlie Vogelheim, thanks for coming on, too. Always fun to have you here.
Thanks, Charlie. Thanks, Bill.
Peter, it's always great to be with you, man. I really enjoy it.
I hope you feel better.
I need to leave now.
Yeah. Well, we'll wrap it up now. And thanks, folks, for having tuned in. Join us here again next week.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.